UMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 5th of May, 2021, Cinco de Mayo. My name is Arthur, and this is the grand hour. I'm going to start the show off with a bit of throwback from last week from Orson Welles. This is another Orson Welles drama. It's a spinoff of The Third Man, the character he played in the Graham Greene novel's adaptation. This is titled The Lives of Harry Lime. The show is titled Rogue's Holiday. An original air date of the 21st of September, 1951. Thanks for listening.
Presenting Orson Welles as The Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna. As those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man, yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. No. He had many lives. And I can tell you about all of them. How? Because my name is Harry Lime.
Did I ever tell you about the time when I outwitted three very suspicious Wall Street investors at a net profit to yours truly of 55,000 American dollars? No? Well, I will sometime. Anyway, because of that little caper, I decided that an ocean trip would be good for my nerves and for the nerves of some half dozen New York detectives. And that's how I happened to go on a holiday. A rogue's holiday, if you will.
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man in Rogue's Holiday.
Very pleasant. The day I saw out of New York aboard the Queen Anne, bound for Southampton. I was on the passenger list as J. Harrington Lime. I ate, of course, at the captain's table. Remembering how I'd put the investments of those three Wall Street brokers in my own personal piggy bank, whenever I was asked,
And what business are you in, Mr. Lime?
I would smile to myself and answer, I'm an investment broker, Lady Barbara. It is the Lady Barbara Folliot, isn't it?
Yes, of course.
I thought we'd met. Aren't you also sitting at the captain's table?
Yes, that's right.
And I seem to remember that there's an empty chair at the table next to yours. You're not traveling alone.
It's of no importance. You are on a holiday, Mr. Lyon?
A holiday? After a manner of speaking, yes.
I don't understand.
I'm so interested in my work, Lady Barbara, that I'm seldom able to keep from mixing pleasure and business.
Oh, you seem so young to be engaged in so complex a business. Investment banker.
Mm.
I always thought all bankers were portly men in their 50s.
Well, every banker must be able to inspire confidence in his clients, Lady Barbara. The incompetent banker relies on his appearance and his maturity.
And you?
I rely on my record of success, ma'am. No hurry. No hurry at all. Not while I was on my holiday. Pleasant boat, Queen Anne, scheduled to take 6 days to Southampton, she was. I had plenty of time. But the question of Lady Barbara Folliot's bank account and the question of the empty chair next to her at the captain's table preyed a bit on my mind, so I looked at the passenger list. There she was, all right. Lady Barbara Folliot, stateroom A deck, stateroom for two right now. But all it said was Anne Companion. Anne Companion, what did that mean? Not a husband, surely. Looked up the steward for her stateroom. Steward, you're in charge of the staterooms along this corridor, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Yes, now, number six. I believe that's Lady Barbara Folliot's stateroom, isn't it?
I believe
so. Yes, now, I was wondering, just idle curiosity, you know, on the passenger list, she's down as traveling with a companion. But he doesn't say who the companion might be.
He don't, sir?
Steward.
Yes, sir.
Here, take this for your trouble.
Thank you,
now,
sir.
Then, would you tell me who her companion is?
No, sir. Not me, sir. Will that be all?
Here, just a minute now.
Yes,
after
sir.
After all, old man, I slipped you a $10 bill just for a bit of information.
The lady in question, sir, slipped me a double sawbuck not to give out that information, sir.
A double sawbuck?
$20, sir.
Ah, yes. Well, then, I'll just take this for your trouble. Hmm?
Thank you,
now,
sir.
Now, then, about Lady Barbara's companion.
You were planning a little hanky-panky, no doubt, sir.
Thank you, thank you.
Worried, were you, sir, lest the companion might be the husband of the lady in question?
Yes, something like that, yes.
Looking for a little shipboard romance, no doubt, sir.
That's it. Now, who's the companion?
You've got clear sailing, sir. The companion's not her husband. Matter of fact, sir.
Yes?
Take my advice and wait till the companion's got her sea legs, sir. A lot cuter, the companion, than Lady Barbara, sir.
Thank you, Stuart.
Not at all, sir.
So, in the next day or so, I found opportunities for squiring Lady Barbara around the boat, cocktails in the evening, a drink or two after dinner, even a game or two of deck tennis in the afternoon. Something she'd said made me prick up my ears and redouble my attentions to her as a prospective, client. We were having brandy in the lounge after dinner.
The other day, Mr. Lyon...
Yes?
You were saying that what you relied on to inspire your clients with confidence...
was my continuing success, yes, that's right.
I must say, you inspire me with confidence.
Well, that's half the battle for an investment banker like me. Have you some problem with your own investments?
To be frank, yes, I have, Mr. Lyon. We must talk of it further tomorrow.
Well, why not now?
Thank you, I should like to, but the truth is, I must spend...
Ah, your companion. The reason for the empty chair next to you at the table.
Yes,
She hasn't her sea legs yet, hmm?
How did you know it was she, not he? Well, it's no matter. You'll probably be meeting her tomorrow. If she takes a liking to you, Mr. Lyme, as I have, then perhaps we can do some business. That is, if you want to.
Well, anyway, I can be of service, Lady Barbara. Next morning, I ran into their steward, and he told me that both ladies were out promenading. Some caution, I went looking for them. True, I was on holiday, but still, if I could turn my hand to a piece of business. Besides, I was curious about this mysterious companion whose name was not even carried on the passenger list. Turning a corner on the promenade deck, I nearly bumped into them. Quickly, I ducked back behind a bulkhead as they passed.
Courage faire! C'était drôle, hein? Tu es rigolo, ma princesse?
Ma princesse. So, her companion was a princess, uh-huh. For the rest, I'd seen that she wore a veil close over her hair and face, but no veil could conceal that beauty, and I'd seen something else that interested me, too. A string of pearls, matched pearls. I maneuvered into position for the next round on the promenade. Lady Barbara!
Oh, good morning, Mr. Lyme. Anne, this is the nice man I've told you about who's been so kind to me. Mr. Lyme, this is Miss Jones.
How do you do, Mr. Lyme? I am pleased to meet you.
Miss Jones? Such an ordinary name for such an extraordinary young lady.
He makes nice speeches, Barbara, just as you said he did.
Perhaps you'll permit me to join you?
Oh, I'm so sorry. We were just going in, Mr. Lyme, weren't we, Barbara?
Well, then at least, Miss Jones, maybe you will join me and Lady Barbara this evening before dinner.
Mr. Lyme insists on the practice of buying me a cocktail before dinner, Anne.
Why, I should like that. Only, as to cocktails, the ship's doctor told me that perhaps until I am stronger, I should drink champagne.
Perfect. I'll make sure there's a bottle nice for you, Miss Jones. Miss Jones, eh? I was sure that while that name Jones was a phony, the pearls weren't. This was promising to become one of the more profitable holidays I'd spent. That evening, I was in the lounge early, a bucket of iced champagne by my side.
Oh, Mr. Lyme, as you promised, my wine.
It's vintage, Miss Jones. I think it should be adequate. No, Lady Barbara?
Oh, she was a little indisposed. She sends her regards.
Please sit down. Steward, I confess, Miss Jones, I'm not too sorry Lady Barbara's not joining us tonight.
So?
I was looking forward so to meeting you. You'd become a lady of mystery. And having met you this morning on the promenade deck, I spent the day looking forward to chatting with you.
Oh, more pretty speeches.
all right, sir?
Yes, fine. Fine, thank you. If the wine meets with Miss Jones' approval.
Miss Jones knows little of wines, Mr. Lyme. She is content to leave such matters to you. You have won Lady Barbara's confidence, and that means that you have won mine, too.
Then a toast to your improved health, Miss Jones.
Now, why do you always pause? As if you do not remember my name.
Oh, my apologies. Very rude of me. I'm awfully sorry.
I accept your... Oh!
What is it?
Oh, my string of necklaces. It broke. Oh, my pearls.
Oh, here. All... Here, look out. Just hold still. You know how many of them there were? Now, don't move.
Yes, there were 64.
Just so we can make sure none of them have rolled under... Here. Yeah, here's another.
Oh, such a stupid thing. No, I really must have...
Please. Here. Here's another. Steward.
No, it is all right. I think that's all of them. Let me see. Quickly, that's 5, 10, 15.
Yes, sir.
Just hang on a second, will you? The lady's string of pearls broke. It may be that one or two are still missing
somewhere.
I have never done
such a bêtise, such a foolish thing. 55 and 5 is 60, and 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, that is a whole lot of them. Thank you, Stuart.
lucky thing, ma'am.
Oh, Mr. Lyme, do me a great favor.
Anything at all. I say you're sure they're all here.
Oh, yes, sure. Take them, will you? You have an envelope, perhaps, or a safe pocket. Take them for me to the little jewelry shop. You know the one right on the stairs?
Oh, sure, I know the shop, but...
Maybe it's still open. You can have the man restring them properly on a strong new string. Or would you do that?
Well, I'm not sure I like the idea, really, of wandering around the ship with a handful of loose pearls. These look like the real thing.
Oh, no, they will be perfectly safe. Now, won't you, for me, such a little favor, if the shop should still be open, please?
Leave you?
Oh, I shall sit here quite quietly. Just thinking how lucky I am that you were with me when the string broke. Till you return. All right?
All right. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Orson Welles returns in just a moment as the third man. And now, Orson Welles as the third man continues with Rogue's Holiday.
So there I was, by myself, free as the wind, with 64 pearls in my pocket. Even one of them, one of the bigger ones, be worth, well, £5,000, something like that. Nice sum. My stateroom, I had some loose pearls, paste. I could have made the switch easily enough, had plenty of time. And a stupid thief might have done just that. But not Harry Lyme. Oh, no. I'd play it smart. I'd wait till later. Went straight to the ship's jeweler.
String broker?
If you could do a quick but good repair job, old man, I'd be most grateful.
Oh, it's easy enough. Just take a moment. Just roll them out here. Good ones, aren't they?
Well, they look it, don't they?
Yes. To an expert's eye, they're very handsome indeed.
How much would you estimate that string to be worth, old man?
If you were to just walk into this shop and ask to buy them,
yes.
Or if you wanted me to find you another 64 like
them. No, just walk in and buy them. £50,000?
Oh, I'd say this string closer to 150,000, sir.
Well,
I was a pretty rich man there for a few minutes.
There you are, sir. Yes. That string shouldn't break very quickly.
Thank you very much. What do I owe you?
Oh, forget it, sir. It's a privilege to be handling those pearls, even if only for a moment.
It would have been foolish for me to tamper with his fortune while we were still aboard ship. 2 days we'd be in Southampton, at which there'd be still plenty of time. The important thing was to get this lovely girl's confidence, which I most certainly did. And the second thing was to pry under her incognito. Who was she? Which princess of the blood was anxious to conceal her identity under the plebeian name of Jones? And why? Not until the last night, when the ship was gliding into the soft darkness past Plymouth, when the two of us stood under a sickle moon on the boat deck, did I find out. If she looked lovely in that moonlight, her pearls looked even lovelier.
Oh, what a wonderfully soft, warm night.
I hadn't noticed.
You had not? Oh, the band has begun playing again.
It has?
Can't you hear it? What's the matter with you?
Well, I need all my five senses for something more important than looking at nights or listening to dance bands.
No, Mr. Lyme.
Harry.
Now, Harry, you must know.
If the night is warm, it's because it must be. To afford you a warm mantle. If the band is playing, it's only to provide a setting for your voice. Miss Jones.
My name is...
Yes?
Anne.
Don't move.
Please.
What price the warmth of the night, of the music, of the band?
Oh, you kiss very expertly, Mr.
Harry.
Or should I say you seem very practiced.
If a cat may look at a king...
Yes?
Then perhaps it's all right. If I kiss a princess.
Oh, you could like me.
Well, I knew you were a princess, not your name, if that matters.
You are uncanny, Mr. Lyme.
Harry.
Since you have gotten this far and since you have shown yourself trustworthy, I can see no reason for not telling you anymore. I am Anne de Bourbon, Princess of Helwigstein.
At your service, ma'am.
You have heard of our principality? It is in Eastern Germany. Beyond the Iron Curtain. I should say it was. It is no more. It's all gone except...
Except what?
I'm not sure. I will not know until I meet my husband in London. If I meet my husband.
If? Well, there's some doubt.
I have said too much already, Mr. Lyme. It is too bad. It has been a pleasant evening. I was almost able to forget for a moment. Good night.
She was gone, just like that. At least I knew now who she was. Whether I'd be able to find her again in London, whether I'd frightened her away, and with her my chance at that string of pearls by letting her know that I knew she was a princess, all these things I was a little nervous about. Till next day, just as I was getting ready to disembark in Southampton, Lady Barbara came up to me rather quickly.
Mr. Lyme, here, a note.
A note from...
Read it, please.
After last night, I've been worried for fear I might just possibly have said something which, you know, might have offended your friend, Miss Jones.
Offended her? Oh, read the note.
The note paper bore a crest, a colonnette. It was one sheet of heavy paper folded once. There was no salutation. The note said, as you said, a cat may look at a king. It might be interesting and fun to experiment once more with your other statement, the one about a princess. There was no signature. But none was necessary.
Do you feel better?
Yes, but...
She asked me to tell you that we would be stopping at the Carlton. We'll hope to see you there.
So she had arranged that we should meet again, after all. But when we met again, away from the dangerous confines of an ocean liner, I proposed to relieve her lovely neck of those lovely pearls. Oh, sure, I was on a holiday and sentiment was involved, but... These were factors that had to be disregarded. My scheme was foolproof. As it turned out, the scheme wasn't needed. The first time I saw her in the sitting room of her Carlton suite.
Mr. Lyme.
Oh.
All right, Harry. Harry, you have already done me one favor. I hate to ask you,
I've told you I'm at your service, Miss Jones.
No, call me Anne, please.
If you want me, Highness, I shall be...
No, don't leave, Barbara. Stay with us. You know the favor I have to ask of Harry anyway.
To say anything short of murder, Anne.
No, it's nothing like that. First, listen. On shipboard, you remember, I told you I was to meet my husband.
If, you said. Hmm?
Yes, if. This is the if. Years ago, Harry, when the Red Army was driving through East Germany, we had to flee. My husband hid what was valuable that we had.
jewels and gold plate, a pitiful collection, really, but all we had. He hid it himself. He alone knew where it was. He trusted in those days no one. Then, a few weeks ago, we planned to get it back. It would cost us a lot, we knew. Bribes, the purchase of a plane, fee for the pilot, more bribes and always more bribes. Klaus had to fly into Helvigstein, don't you see, himself. Mad and dangerous idea.
I think so.
But he refused to tell anyone else where his cachet was. He could not trust anyone. I went to America to raise some funds that was needed. Lady Barbara has been good enough to lend us more. But just today, I have learned that even more is needed.
More money?
Mr. Lyme, say no quickly if you cannot do me this favor. But I have exhausted all my other resources. If you knew how much it costs to bribe these officials over here.
Oh, I'll bet. How much do you need?
Oh, you will do it? It's just a loan, mind you.
It's a pleasure.
Lady Barbara's investment will bring her all we need at the first of the next quarter, and then I can repay you
with... Please, how much do you need?
$10,000. It is too much?
I don't think so. No, certainly not.
And see, for security, on your loan, here, you will take this. My pearls. You have already once guarded them well.
Oh, please, I wouldn't dream of...
Yes, I insist. Otherwise, I will not even ask you for the loan of the $10,000.
Oh, well, if you insist.
Here, take them. Now, how can we arrange to get the money?
Well, I have more than that here in the hotel safe in American dollars, too. Just let me ring the desk. A trip downstairs in the lift, elevator to you, back up again to my room and over to hers. I handed her 10 bills. She handed me the pearls. We smiled, shook hands on the deal, and I walked out of her room with a fortune in my pocket. I call for a celebration. Pal of mine runs a pub saloon to you in London. I use it as a sort of message sender. I have letters sent me there. My pal knows all the gossip who's in town, who swindled whom, all the news I need in my business, so I went straight to him.
Harry, I haven't seen you for months.
Afternoon, Barney. Give me a whiskey and soda, double whiskey and soda. None of your bar whiskey either. Something good. One for yourself. I'm celebrating.
So am I, man. So am I. I'm celebrating your return.
Well, good.
How long have you been in England?
Oh, just a little while.
Too hot for you in the States, was it?
Look, can we have a drink somewhere in private?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Follow me. Got onto something good, have you?
I'll be leaving London pretty quick, Barney. I have to go to Europe, France, I guess maybe Italy.
Why, you've only just got here.
I pulled a quick one. They may be looking for me in London sooner than I like to think.
Uh-huh. What for? Unless it's something you think I should know about.
Look, Barney.
Well, now, aren't they beauties? Real thing, aren't they?
I had them priced by a jeweler who said he'd ask £150,000 for them.
Oh, that should keep you in cigarettes for a week or two. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Not half bad. Not, in fact, a quarter better. Let me have a look. Do you mind?
Look them over all you want, Barney. I'll fence them in Paris somewhere. This is your last look, old man.
Uh-huh. Where did you say you got them?
Off a German princess. She gave them to me as a security on a loan.
Mm-hmm. German princess, is it?
Yes, French-born, I think.
French-born, you think?
Yes.
Name of what?
Anne de Bourbon, Princess of Helvigstein.
Oh.
Yes, very good. What's so funny? What's so very funny?
Anne de Bourbon. Princess the Helvigstein.
All right, old man. All right, better let me in on the joke.
I thought these pearls looked funny. Although you said they weren't gem.
You're crazy. Barney, I had them priced myself.
Maybe you had some pearls priced, but not these, my boy. You've been had. The oldest trick in the world. Pulled on you, Harry Lyme.
Now, you're lying. Now, don't try to pull your tricks on me, Barney. A joke's a joke, but...
Oh, I don't have to. It's been pulled already. Harry, me bucko. I know who Andy Bourbon is. I know who the Princess von Helvigstein is, too. She's a slick little article.
Oh, no.
But she ain't German. She's not French-born, and I don't think you'll ever find any Helvigstein on no map. She's Doris Jones.
Oh.
That's who she is. And she was born right here in Clapham. That's where she was born. And she took you and shook you for, how much?
I gave her 10,000 American dollars. I don't believe you.
I'll die. The oldest gang in the world has pulled on none other than Harry Lyme himself. I'll die.
Room 316, please.
Harry, when this news gets around, boy...
That's right, I'm calling Miss Jones. No, never mind. Oh.
Well, do I win me bet? And did you lose your 10,000 American dollars?
Yes. All I've got are these pearls.
Oh, better than nothing, Gary. It's a good imitation. Must be worth 50 pounds.
50 pounds? Well, I'm on my holiday. I come out ahead after all.
What? Well, what about your 10,000 American dollars?
Wait till your slick little article from Clapham tries to pass that 10,000, Barney. They're counterfeit. That'll teach Miss Jones to try anything fast with Harry Lyme.
Harry Lyme returns in just a moment. Now, Harry Lyme.
Well, it seems that Miss Jones found herself a legitimate prince, one of those exiles in Portugal, and settled down with him in Lisbon. I ran into her at Estoril a couple of seasons later. She was a real princess now. But it seems His Highness isn't as young as he was and probably never was, so the princess is very democratic. She asked me to their place for dinner, said she thought I'd be interested in some of the interior decorations. I was. She complimented me on my nice set of pearl studs, which she recognized, and showed me into the cloakroom, which was entirely wallpapered in American $10 bills, or a reasonable facsimile. I recognized them. No hard feelings, you understand. It's a pleasant little caper, and I always enjoy moving about amongst the upper classes. It's so educational. Well, goodbye for now. Don't take any lead nickels. And remember, if you can't manage to resist temptation, be sure you get it appraised.
I may never have met you. We don't go way back. Maybe we wouldn't even be friends if we did. But when you wear a mask, you have my respect. Because your mask doesn't protect you. It protects me. I wear my mask to protect you. Mask up, America.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. We heard Harry Lyme, Rogue's Holiday, with an original air date of the 21st of September, 1951, starring Orson Welles. Depending on who you talk to, some folks like the show, some folks think he's just trying to get some sort of money grab based on the character he portrayed in The Third Man to fund his movie adventures. Either way, it's Orson Welles. I'm just piggybacking that off of Black Museum. I don't know too much about this program. I want to say he recorded it over in England, but I'm not going to say with any certainty. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. For the second half of the program today, I'm going to return to Dr. Six Gun. This one is titled Choice Between Yom Kippur and Dueling, with an original air date of the 23rd of September, 1954. Thanks.
Across the rugged Indian territory rides a tall young man on a mission of mercy, his medical bag strapped on one hip, his six-shooter on the other. This is Dr. Six Gun. The National Broadcasting Company brings you another episode in the exciting adventure series, Dr. Six Gun. Gray Matson, M.D., was the gun-toting frontier doctor who roamed the length and breadth of the old Indian territory. Friend and physician to white men and Indian alike, the symbol of justice and mercy in the lawless West of the 1870s, this legendary figure was known to all as Dr. Six Gun.
The territory is a place where men look up to the skies and call out to heaven in many different ways. We have seen the wagons of the Mormons rolling west, Dunkards, Mennonites, the Catholic Padres of the Spanish missions to the south and the west, and in the Indian country, the worship of the Manitou, the sun, and the spirits of the dead goes on as it has for 1,000 years before the coming of the white man. Sometimes these different peoples, overwhelmed with their separate truths, have been somewhat impatient to each other. Of course, I am a neutral. I am the brother of whoever made needles or pins or a yard of ribbon. And who am I? Pablo, the gypsy peddler. And this is my friend Midnight. He is a raven, but a philosopher.
All men are brothers.
You see, a humanist.
Words, too.
And a universalist. Of course, in the territory, a place of violent death and violent life, many men face eternity with a curse and a defiant pistol shot into the quiet sky. Such a man was Harvey Frazier. He was standing at the end of the bar at the Bull Run Saloon one night, drinking quietly. I was sitting at a table with Doc Six Gun when O'Shea, proprietor of the Bull Run, came up to the table.
Evening, Doc. Everything all right?
O'Shea, Piney's cooking is improving week by week. This steak is much tenderer than the one I had last Monday.
It ain't Piney that's improving, Doc. It's the side of beef both them steaks come off of. It's aging and mellowing.
Too bad the same can't be said for your whiskey.
I don't get the turnover in beef I get in whiskey. It ain't got time to age. Sometimes it ain't got the time to quit sloshing around in the barrel from the wagon ride over from the distillers in Chisholm City.
Well, you keep right on serving it, O'Shea. I'm figuring on all the cases of whiskey poisoning and delirium tremens to support me in my old age.
Doc was right. The military title was left over from the war. Colonel Touro was a tall, graying man. Soft-spoken, but with a glint of steel showing through.
You think she'll be all right then, Doctor?
I see no reason why not. She's a healthy young... healthy woman.
You can say it, Doctor. She's young, and I'm not.
Well, anyway, she'll have no trouble giving birth, as far as I can see. We figured she's in her fifth month.
Well, I'd like to thank you, sir, for traveling this far from town. I would come in myself, but I've been so occupied during the week with putting the ranch to rights. And since I do not travel on Saturday, and I hesitate to intrude on your Sunday.
Oh, I'm afraid my Sunday's far from sacred, Colonel. Babies, broken legs, and gunshot wounds have a habit of occurring on the Lord's Day.
Sunday?
Yes, of course. Oh, you mentioned Saturday, didn't you? I suppose you're Seventh-day Adventist.
No, I'm afraid my attachment to Saturday as the Sabbath antedates the Adventist by some thousands of years.
I beg your pardon, Colonel.
I'm sorry to confuse you, Doctor. I am, as a matter of fact, of Hebrew persuasion.
Oh.
Does that surprise you, Doctor?
Yes, I suppose it does. Frankly, I never met many... Well, what's the right term, Colonel?
You have your choice of many, sir. The most desirable ones being Hebrew, Israelite, Jew. It doesn't matter.
Well, out here in the territory, there aren't many of you folks. I recall one doctor when I was a student in Boston, but he was a German, mostly. I was just surprised. I thought you were a Southerner.
I am.
Oh, I mean,
Pray don't concern yourself, Doctor. I know quite well what you mean. As a matter of fact, my family has been in Louisiana and a part of Georgia since Revolutionary times. We may have perhaps been something of an anomaly since we ran our plantation on free labor.
That is unusual.
Perhaps. You see, Doctor, if you know your Bible, you remember that the children of Israel were slaves in the land of Egypt.
Of course, led to freedom by Moses.
Well, we have a holiday each year to celebrate that liberation. And I suspect my father became increasingly uncomfortable each year thanking God for the deliverance of his ancestors from bondage, while he held the ownership papers of some hundreds or more slaves, several of whom served the dishes of bitter herbs that are supposed to remind us of the bitter days of slavery.
I can see that he might.
My father, being not only a righteous man, but a good planter as well, freed the slaves and set a reasonable price, taking it out of wages over a good many years. And by the time I came into the property, all our people were free and working for wages. It made us somewhat unpopular in the county.
But you fought for the South.
Yes, it was my country. Pray do not point out the inconsistency. I'm well aware of it. And now, Doctor, I'd like to invite you to join us this evening. It is the eve of the new year.
The new year?
Our calendar is somewhat ancient, Doctor, and has tended to drag a little. But take my word for it, though, it is the new year.
And so Doc and I were invited to spend this alien holiday with Colonel Turo and his young wife. We had apple dipped in honey, which we were told signified the wish for a sweet and prosperous new year. We did not see Colonel Turo again until next week. He came into the Bull Run on Friday morning and found Doc eating his breakfast.
Good morning, Doctor. I'm pleased to see you again.
Well, Colonel Turo, what brings you to town?
A business, I'm afraid. I've been arranging to import some blooded stock to replace the Longhorns.
Won't you join me for breakfast?
Well, thank you.
O'Shea?
Huh? What is it, Doc?
This is Colonel Turo. He'd like some breakfast.
Well, sure thing. What'll it be? Steak? Little pie? Hash?
I think just a boiled egg and black coffee, if you will.
Oh, that ain't enough breakfast for a fly, hardly.
It'll do nicely, I assure you.
Well, all right, but a boiled egg ain't hardly a challenge to pining.
Colonel, I don't know if I thanked you enough when I was out to your place. I just hope I wasn't intruding on your observances.
Oh, no, no, not at all, sir. I was about to ask a favor of you.
Sure, what is it?
Well, it's rather complicated. You see, I won't get my reply from St. Louis about the cattle until afternoon stage gets in from Chisholm City. Now, at that time, I would be unable to reach my home by nightfall.
It's a clear trail, though. Besides, it's the full of the moon. You shouldn't have any trouble.
I'm afraid I haven't made my problem clear. At sundown this evening, the Sabbath starts.
I see.
Now, I'm afraid I've compromised my inheritance a number of times. Probably if that were all, I would ride home. And, well, in a modern world, the old ways sometimes are not followed too strictly. But this evening is the start of, well, the Hebrew word would not mean anything to you. It's Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement.
That's an important day.
It's most solemn of our year, Doctor. It's the day when all the sins of mankind are brought forward for judgment, when we repent and mourn and consider our conscience carefully. It's a day that weighs most heavily on us. For example, I told you of my father freeing his slaves. Well, it was on the Passover that the idea occurred to him. But it was on the Day of Atonement when he examined his heart and set them free.
I see. Then you don't want to be traveling on that day. Huh?
That's right. And more, inasmuch as there is no congregation to hold any services in these parts, I would like to spend the day alone in meditation. Now, at the lodging house, I have been sharing my room with a stockman from Texas. Well, he's a cheerful sort, but he's not exactly conducive to meditation. I wondered if there might be a room in your house.
Why, of course, Colonel. It'd be a pleasure.
I won't be any trouble. It's our custom to fast on this day, so even that difficulty need not trouble you.
Be no trouble, Colonel. I'll be proud to have you as my guest on a day that means a lot to you.
Contrary to the impression I may have given you, sir, I am not really a particularly pious man. But this day, I feel somehow it is a mark of respect to my father and my people. I suppose you've met Southerners overcome with mourning for their fallen country.
Yes, yes, I have.
Well, sir, on this day, we mourn our country that fell almost 2,000 years ago.
Colonel Touro sat with Doc through the afternoon, waiting for his message on the afternoon stage. He passed the time telling Doc of the customs of his people of the South before Fort Sumter and trading war experiences. It was about an hour before sundown when O'Shea came over to Doc's table.
Doc, excuse me, Colonel.
What is it, O'Shea?
It's Harvey Fraser.
He hasn't been in here today, has he?
Yeah, he was in before you came in. He's been fired off the barrel A, and he was in a mean mood. I gave him one drink, and I told him I wasn't going to serve him no more.
Well, I thought that was contrary to your professional...
Now, look, I'm not joshing, Doc. I told him I don't mind a raucous drunk or even a fighting drunk, but I'm plain scared to death of the quiet, mean kind. I told him to get out. I had my gun on the bar so he'd know I wasn't funning. And he got.
Then what's the problem?
Well, I told you he'd get his liquor somewhere else. Picked up a quarter mule down at the livery stable, and he's been sucking on it all afternoon.
Oh, you think he's coming back here after you?
I know darn well he is. Charlie seen him coming up the street. He should have given me them pills or something. There he is outside the swinging doors.
Now, wait. Put those guns up, O'Shea. He may not be shooting.
Well, anyways, he finished his bottle.
Where is he? Where is that sniveling, psalm-singing barkeep that won't serve a man liquor?
Now, take it easy, Harvey. Now, Harvey, you're just talking plain foolish.
Yeah? Well, you ain't got a gun on me now, O'Shea. As a matter of fact, I got one on you.
Now, Harvey...
Drop your gun belt to the floor. Go on.
Let me put him up on the bar. I don't want to get sawdust in the barrel.
Now, wait a minute, Fraser.
Don't you horn in none, Doc. I'm running this here drive. Put them guns down, O'Shea. All right, now you going to serve me?
Ain't you had enough with a quarter mule?
I said, are you going to serve me?
Sure, Harvey. What's your pleasure?
A whiskey. Make it full measure. And I'm going to let it go at that, O'Shea, because I ain't mad at you. I'm looking for some low, sneaking red polecat that took my job.
Where does that man work, Doctor?
The barrel A, I think.
Oh.
You know what that crawling hound done to me? He fixed it so as I got fired. The boss says I don't need so many hands now, so, Harvey, here's your time.
I don't get it. What's this Southerner got to do with it?
Maybe I can explain. I suppose the owner of the barrel A decided he didn't need as many men after he sold half his range acreage to a newcomer.
That's right. Who are you?
Arthur Touro. I bought the land from the barrel, eh?
Why,
look out.
You're wearing a gun. Make your move.
I want to talk to you.
Make your move or I'll gun you down right now.
All right.
Get his gun, O'Shea.
My hand. Doc, my hand.
He didn't hit you, Fraser. He got your gun.
I was aiming for his hand.
That's some shooting, anyways. You've got some move from leather, Colonel.
In the old days, it was a fashion in my country among the gentry to duel for slights to their honor. In my case... I was often slighted, and I seldom lost a duel.
Doc, I can't feel my fingers.
Just soak them in cold water. They'll be all right. Maybe you better soak your head, too.
I'll take care of that, Doc. I got the dish pail right here. Okay. you wanted him to sober up, didn't you, Doc?
You've done this to me, mister. Colonel, whatever you are. You lost me my job and hurt my hand. All right, now you listen. You and this pot-bellied barkeep are plenty brave when you got my gun. Well, I think you're a no-good cowardly hound. We don't want you or anybody like you in the territory. Coming in and pushing other people out.
I thought we settled this.
No, we didn't. Now you listen. I'll be waiting for you in the street tomorrow morning. Cold sober, so my hand's steady. If you get any guts, you be there. And we'll settle it then. O'Shea, give me my gun.
Give it to him.
Here you are, Harvey. Now, get out.
I'll be waiting for you tomorrow, Colonel.
Well, Doctor, if you don't mind, as it approaches sundown, I think I'd like to retire.
Sure, Colonel. Come on, I'll show you the way.
We all walked over to Doc's. There was no mention of Harvey Fraser and his challenge. When we got to the house, Colonel Turo opened a carpet bag and took out a prayer book and a long white shawl with a black stripe at each end and fringes.
This was my father's prayer shawl, and so the legend goes, his father's before him. Doctor, I'll just ask you to hold my gun. It's not proper for the day, you know. The custom is to follow the biblical injunction to do no work, which is held to mean to carry no money and, of course, no weapons. Actually, Doctor, being alone and not a learned man, I can only make a respectful gesture toward the service. But I do what I can.
And so, throughout the evening, Colonel Turo sat by himself, wrapped in the old prayer shawl, and read from the prayer books, murmuring this strange language softly to himself. In the morning, Doc had breakfast at the Bull Run, and the Colonel stayed in his room. I think Doc was much impressed. The unfamiliar ritual was somehow awesome.
It's real strange. Here you learn in Bible school all about these people. Chances are you never get to really know any. Not in this part of the country.
You could have fooled me. I would have thought the colonel was an American.
O'Shea, when did your father come over from Ireland?
1848, when the potatoes gave out. Why?
The colonel had kin way back that signed the Declaration of Independence.
Huh? Oh, yeah, I see what you mean, Doc. What did the colonel say about Harvey Fraser?
Nothing.
Well, Harvey rode into town at sunup. He's been waiting around ever since to catch the colonel on the street.
O'Shea, you mean he seriously intends...
He sure does. He's telling anybody who'll listen that the colonel is a yellow dog who's going to sulk in his room all day because he's scared.
But I told you, it's this very important religious time for the colonel.
That don't make no never mind to Harvey. You'll be telling everybody how he made the colonel back down.
But the colonel can't fight or even carry a gun today. It's against his religion.
I don't know if Harvey will wait till tomorrow. He's really got blood in his eye. He comes in here for a drink maybe every 2 hours just so he won't get too much and unsteady his gun hand. Looks to me like the colonel is over a barrel.
Doc went back to the house, and about noon, the colonel got up and started for the door.
Wait a minute, Colonel. Where are you going?
For a walk.
Wait, I thought... I mean, is that allowed?
Oh, it's considered proper to take a short walk on the holy day.
But you know, Colonel, this is a pretty wild town.
I'm aware of that, sir.
Maybe because of the day, it'd be better to stay in.
I don't take your meaning, sir.
Well, Colonel... Be honest. Harvey Fraser is out there waiting for you.
Oh, yes. Yes, he said he would be, didn't he?
So you can't go out.
Why not?
Because he'll gun you down.
Doctor, in my old home in our country, if a man challenged your courage and impugned your honor, there was only one thing to do. You meet him.
Oh, then you're going to take your gun.
No. Not today, Doctor.
But you can't just go out there and walk into Harvey Fraser's bullets without your gun, without fighting back.
Not today, Doctor. My honor has nothing to do with respect for my father's. Not in this case. I cannot compromise one for the other. Now, if you'll excuse me, Doctor, I'll take my short walk.
Colonel, you... You've still got the prayer shawl on?
Yes. I trust the townspeople won't find it too startling. An interesting custom... You know, often a man has the same shawl from boyhood. And when he dies, it becomes his shroud. Well, good morning, Doctor. And peace to you.
And so, down the street of Frenchman's Ford walked Colonel Touro, his flat-crowned hat set square on his head and around his shoulders the yellowing silk of a prayer shawl shipping in the light breeze. He walked slowly and steadily as if it were in respect to the day, as if the measured steps along the board sidewalk were but an aid to meditation and prayer. Doc came charging out of the house after him and crossed diagonally to the bull rock.
O'Shea, listen. The colonel's out taking a walk. Where's the sheriff?
No, Doc.
Listen, if Sheriff Hanson doesn't do something, we've got to find Fraser and
you
get him to...
You found him, Doc.
What?
Didn't see me at the end of the bar? Well, I'm glad to know the colonel's out walking. I'll give him a chance to enjoy the fresh air. Then I'll go out and meet him.
He hasn't got his guns.
Don't hand me that, Doc. Man who shoots like that ain't without his guns. O'Shea, a little drink. A short one, just for sociability, but not enough to shake your hand.
Harvey, let the colonel alone. This is an important day for him.
Yeah, sure is, Doc. Get that drink, O'Shea. Yeah. Let me see how far the old goat got down the street. Huh? Coming back this way. All right, O'Shea. My drink.
Here you are.
Well, I'm right sorry to run off like this, but I got an appointment with a polecat for a little walk down the street. Adios, Doc.
There was nothing too unusual in the scene. A dozen times in the last year, two men have stood in the dust of the street at Frenchman's Ford. A dozen times, the loungers in front of the livery stable have dived for cover, and the barber has run out to put up his shutters. Harvey Fraser stood in the street, his legs planted wide apart, his Stetson jammed back on his head, his hand hanging limp on a level with his gun butt. We've seen that many times in the territory. And then Harvey started forward, walking slowly to meet the colonel, who stepped down the middle of the street now, as if he were on parade with his regiment.
All right, you yellow dog. Make your move.
Can't he see the colonel hasn't got his gun?
I don't think he cares.
I'm going to stop him.
I wouldn't, Doc. Harvey'd gun you down, and in these parts, he'd get off scot-free. Jury don't hold with one fella interfering with another man's fight.
But it's murder.
There ain't nothing to do but wait, Doc. That's all.
Closer, they came together on the street, and we could see that the colonel seemed to be talking to himself in that strange tongue of so many years ago.
Draw. Go ahead, you old wall-eyed steer, draw. I give you your chance. Don't come no closer. I'm gonna gun you down. Draw. All right, you think I won't. What's the matter with my eyes? There. I drew my gun. Now make your move. If you take one step more, I'm going...
He's down. Come on, O'Shea.
He just fell down like he'd been poleaxed. I got his gun, Doc.
What happened, Doctor? I'd already said the prayer for the dead for myself.
Shall I rope him, Doc?
I don't think you'll have to, O'Shea. When he comes to, he's going to be violently sick to his stomach.
Is he ill? I'm too old a man to believe that the Lord intervened in Frenchman's Ford the way he did in Babylon.
If it was the Lord, Colonel, he done it through Doc.
Never mind, O'Shea.
Well, he ought to know. Doc took my advice, finally. He fixed Harvey's last drink while he was looking out the door. And say, by the way, what did you put in it, Doc?
I'd rather not say. But he isn't going to be too comfortable for a few days.
I should thank you, Doctor.
Now, Colonel, I should not have let you go out.
No, it was my decision. And now, if you will allow me, Doctor, I should get back to my prayers. I'm afraid I have a grave sin for which to atone. I allowed it to profane a holy day with violence.
a sin. How do you figure that, Colonel?
False pride, Doctor. Pride, so that a thing as shallow as honor could be allowed to interrupt the holy day.
You have been listening to Dr. Six Gun, brought to you each week at this time by the National Broadcasting Company. Doc Six Gun is played by Carl Weber and Pablo by William Griffiths. Today's script was written by Ernest Kenoy. Heard in the cast were William Keane as O'Shea, Bill Adams as Colonel Turo, and Les Damon as Harvey Fraser.
Heard Dr. Six Gun. The title of the show was The Choice Between Yom Kippur and Dueling, with an original air date of the 23rd of September, 1954. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. This show was previously recorded. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks.